Okay. So it's a pleasure to me to have the opportunity to speak about that work here, and that's actually joint work with Stefano Olla. So it's a model of heat conduction where the heat is carried out through collisions between near atoms. So, okay. So it's it goes in the framework where one tries to derive Fourier law in two steps. So this basically the same setup as Thomas Gilbert explained this morning. I mean, it goes in the same kind of things. So by taking two successive limits, so trying to get this equation from an ideally Hamiltonian system, let's say. So one has been looking for a rather simplicity in this model. So the dynamic I will consider is purely one-dimensional dynamics, actually. So let me explain a bit what are those two limits. So you start from a microscopic Hamiltonian, and okay, this is not the model we have stated, but it's I should consider a typical example of such model. So there are, let's say, two characteristics of them. First, that you have in each cell you have such a red ball, and the interaction is controlled by parameter epsilon. So if the radius of the ball starts being too large, you cannot have collisions between atoms, and so no conduction. Then you have a critical radius, and then critical radius minus epsilon, then you start to have a little bit of exchanges. And then the second characteristic is that in each cell, the dynamics is quite have very good, let's say, ergodic properties, but I won't speak too much about that because we actually put it a stochastic noise instead of a real dynamic, so not be really concerned by that aspect. So you see in this model the energy is just kinetic energy of the atoms and so the red balls, and that will be the same in the model we consider. So the first limit is a weak coupling limit, so when epsilon is going to zero and you are interested in an observable which is energy. So energy K is the energy of atom located at K in if there are n atoms, let's say. And you find maybe you can find some alpha such that if you rescale time by a factor epsilon minus alpha, then the EK converges to some process and should take alpha to not be trivial in the sense that if you take too small, then, well, energy never just, in the limit, you just get no exchange and observe nothing. If you take it too large, then just directly go to kind of global equilibrium, also not very interesting. So there is typically one alpha which would work. And in a case like we have, this EK with this curled EK, let's say this limiting process, it's an autonomous Markov process. So although the initial EK were depending on position and impulsion, you have an equation for the process, the energy alone in the limit. Okay, so in the purely Hamiltonian context, the convergence should be with respect to an initial measure, but we have also a noise, so there is that's not exactly that in our case, actually. And I want to insist here that in this limit, the number of particles is just fixed before, so there is not at all space rescaling in that first limit that one takes. And then, okay, then you hope that you can do this work, and then the next step is to take a diffusive or hydrodynamic limit starting from this process, curl E, and you rescale space and time in a diffusive way. And in the sense of hydrodynamic limit, you could maybe get then the heat equation from that. So our contribution is to do this program in one specific model, which is one-dimensional and almost Hamiltonian in the sense that there is also some noise. And let's say there are two sources of inspiration. This is not a list of all people who have contributed, but just which inspired, let's say, ourselves. So this work by Gaspard and Gilbert, which gave the intuition mainly of the theorem that I will say, and then this paper by Liverani and Olla, who did actually the same thing in a model which is a bit different model, and also getting actually a different result somehow. So let me say what is the model. So you have just so it's just one dimensional, and in each you have cells, and in each cell you put just one particle, and they move. I will explain what how they exactly move in their cell, but you have just a small overlap of size epsilon between near cells, and when they go there, they collide. They may collide if they come in the right place, and they exchange the momenta by an elastic collision at that time. And so you see that, so that when you put epsilon going to zero, interaction should become rare, but they are not soft interactions. I mean, they remain pretty strong one because they are collisions. Okay, so let me describe the dynamic in one cell. So when epsilon is put to zero, should I say? So there is a contribution of a stochastic noise and an Hamiltonian part. So the Hamiltonian part, that is very easy, just go back and forth in the cell like that, you move freely. And then we want to mimic the chaotic behavior by just to each particle you give a Poisson clock, and when rings, you just flip the sign of the velocity of this particle. So that is what is done. And all those Poisson clocks, they are independent clocks, in fact. About what? The geometry is that it's really that. So it's really purely one-dimensional and goes like that only. I mean, so the deterministic part is really trivial to analyze. And so you see that this noise preserves energy of each particle, and also act individually on particles. So there is no energy exchange due to noise, for example. Okay, so now what when get some interaction? So as I said, the energies should be purely kinetic in that model. And then since you are in 1D and mass are equal, when they collide, they exchange their momenta. So they also exchange energy. So it means in particular that if you start with some energies in the beginning, you will stay forever with those energies there. So with some n prime smaller than n. So that's advantageous to have this property here. And bon, okay, that's okay. What? Well, you may do them depend. If we actually always assume that energy is not going to zero. So if you want that the clock depends on energy, we didn't do, but it's exactly the same as long as this dependence is not making the clock not ringing, let's say. Yes, so I said that suppose you start with only two energies in the sense that to one first guy you give energy E1 and you have another energy E2 for the, then if you that will be there will be only two energies forever. I mean you cannot mix them. I mean it's collision, but a one-dimensional one. Yeah. Okay, so now I can speak about what we have obtained. So the curled E. So this is the rescaled. Energy at rescale time. So you see that with respect to the alpha that I was saying before, so the right time scale is epsilon minus one here in this problem. And then, okay, let me just define this function gamma, which will be the rate of exchange in the limit. And then I have some assumptions for the theorem that I will say to hold. So we want some regularity on the initial measure. Okay, that might seem reasonable. And then, okay, no zero energy because that causes also troubles, as you can imagine. And then a more strange one, which is that we have to exclude some subset of zero measure about the initial energies, and I will say why this condition has to play some role, we guess. So with that in mind, we then showed that indeed, with this scaling, the process was converging to a process in the limit of epsilon goes to zero, so to the E process, which is indeed an autonomous Markov process. And this is the equation for this Markov process. With P is the probability of this Markov process, no? And you see that it's an exchange process, in fact. No, there are no. So that you just have those cells and then that ends up free, yes. What? I guess doesn't matter, indeed. No. So you start with some initial measure, and you look to the evolution of this measure in the rescale time, and epsilon going to zero. So that is, yes. So, okay. So when you see that, then it's fine, because we will be already able to carry out, in some case, the second part of our program, let's say. So consisting of now going to the hydrodynamic limit from this limit here. So you can, if you wish, take the example where you are only two energies, two different energies. And in that case, gamma can take, so I remember that gamma was this maximum. But obviously, when Ek is equal to Ek plus 1, just doesn't matter what you put for gamma. And so there only remain one. If you take only two energies, then this is just get a constant. And in that case, you get this first equation, which is the symmetric exclusion process. And that's fine, because this is something that's already well understood. The hydrodynamic limit is well understood. In more general case, gamma is not a constant anymore. But anyway, let's say fault in the category that probabilists have studied already, and one get then a heat equation where the coefficient is now depending on the energy or and the temperature. Okay, so now that is said, let me explain a bit about the intuition of the theorem, and I guess it goes pretty much in the same line as what Thomas Gilbert said this morning. So we can take two particles, it's enough for understanding that stuff. So you give energy A1 to the first one, energy A2 to the second one, and look what will happen when epsilon is sent to zero. So you suspect collisions to get more rare. And on the other hand, each particle separately reaches its own equilibrium. Okay, so what is this equilibrium of the equilibrium measure of one particle? So if you suppose that one particle has given energy, then the equilibrium measure of just one particle having a fixed energy is just given by this formula here that I will use in a second. It is very simple, so it's just the most uniform possible one. So you just Lebesgue measure on position and just average over impulsions. So this is just that this equilibrium measure. Okay, now let's do small computation. So suppose that Q1 is less than Q, is at the left of Q2, which is actually, and then that stays like that forever. And what, take a very small interval delta t, time interval, and look what are the conditions for having a collision. Well, you can see that you need to have that B1 being bigger than P2, and the distance between Q1 and Q2 being bounded by that, by T1 minus P2 delta T. And then you try to say what will be the exchange rate of energy for that case. So you could say, okay, that will be one over delta T, and the probability that you get a collision in the time delta T. So if you assume that the both particles are independent of each other and they are in their own equilibrium, then you just take the product measure of the measure that I said here before. So you get then just this formula, no? And with the first characteristic coming from the P1 over P2 and the second characteristic function coming from that stuff. And you do you compute the integral and you get, taking account of boundary condition of Q1 and Q2, you just get this epsilon max, blah, blah. So that means that if we believe this heuristic to make sense, then indeed the time rescaling is epsilon minus 1, and indeed the gamma, the limit, the exchange rate should be given by this max, as I said before. So, and so the work was to justify that this intuitive P picture indeed correct. So maybe now let me now say a small word about the assumption we made on the theorem. So for understanding them, let me say that thing that if you have a time delta t, which is order one in microscopic microscopic scale, then the deterministic trajectory matters because it's probability one that the Poisson clock just doesn't ring, and also the fact that the interaction is strong. So think what should happen if you take a delta as initial condition. I mean a delta in position. It could be a problem because if you can maybe find two positions here such that even in the limit those guys will collide directly according to the deterministic trajectory, and then you should create a discontinuity in the origin of time of your solution, so that the theorem should not be valid, for example, for that kind of initial condition. So you need some smoothness in the initial condition that you will take. Then second stuff is about this condition on the velocity. So look what happens just after a collision occurred. And on the right case, on the right is a case which is not usual, which is where one velocity should be exactly twice as the other one. And here the ratio between P2 and P1 is typical, so typically rational number. And you see that for deterministic trajectory, the situation is pretty different because here, even in the limit epsilon going to zero, they have some they can collide back. Here in this case, for time delta t of order one, they won't actually collide back just after collision. So that means that for delta t of order one in microscopic scale, the correlations are pretty different between those two cases. So here whether the probability of free collision is epsilon, but this is only due to the noise. And so our theorem is only about the typical case, so the first one. And I should guess whoever the other one to be, that a similar theorem should hold, probably with a coefficient gamma that could be different. I should say lower, since there's the mechanism who cancels somehow the transfer of energy in that system. Okay, so now maybe I say a word about how the proof goes. And so the idea was to, as in this paper of Orlan Liverani, to treat the coupled dynamic as a perturbation of uncoupled dynamics. And in our case, so you look at your system at the time epsilon minus one tau, where tau is a macroscopic time, and expand the dynamics in numbers of collision per particle. So then the zero order, there's just no collision, so a particle is free. And the first order term, so one collision, that's something that you can compute explicitly in the limit of epsilon going to zero. And then you're left to show that the second order is of order two square, and there the noise will play a role, actually. So let me see how we do that a bit more in practice. So still, let's take only two particles and take an initial energy that assigns energy E1 to particle 1 and energy E2 to particle 2, which are different energies, but for the rest, it's uniform in space and uniform in the direction of the velocity. And so let me call this PT epsilon to be the evolution of the measure with respect to the coupled dynamics, and P0 to be for the uncoupled dynamics. And then if we want to have the theorem, it's enough to prove a formula of that type. So take a small time, macroscopic time tau to go to zero, and epsilon even much smaller than tau, for example, tau to the square or something like that. And then you want to show that this coupled dynamics is equal to the uncoupled one, plus a first order in tau correction, which is actually corresponding to the exchange, plus a term, which is our order of tau square, let's say. And if you have that, then that follows relatively easily. So to do such a thing, one can think about applying a Duhamel expansion to the transfer operator. So you just write PT as exponential of this generator. And then, okay, do the first order Duhamel expansion. Then you have still something with epsilon here, so you cannot. So you do a second order expansion to have those two last lines here. And okay, then the first line you can actually compute explicitly in the limit epsilon going to zero. And the second one, take account of recollisions, then the noise is useful to show that this is actually of order tau square. So what I have written, that's a bit formal what I have written, because you see those L should contain delta and stuff like that corresponding to collisions. So when you try to multiply delta, that doesn't work very well. So what we actually did was to discretize time a little bit and consider the dynamics with some small times in order to avoid those problem of definitions which occur otherwise. Okay, so now let me still, as concluding, let's say, say whether we are able to somehow go. So it's a bit artificial, this decomposition in two steps. I mean, first going to a first limit and then taking a second limit. Should be desirable to can go directly from the microscopic system to some diffusive limit. So unfortunately, one is not yet able to do so, except there is one small case that we somehow understand now, and okay, it's a bit anecdotic stuff, but still I should say. So you start with this system. So you just put one fast particle in a sea of slow particles, and you let then time evolve. I don't know where is the stuff. So after some time, there will be a collision, and the red point will move on the right, the second condition again on the right, and then maybe on the left, and so on. So you will observe some kind of random walk of this red point, or of this energy, this high energy atom. And that's something that this anecdotic case can understand, actually, although we didn't make a really theorem about that. So introduce a shift in your dynamics such that you take the point of view of the particle, and so that the red point always stay in the middle now. And then, so call this XS to be the shifted dynamics. And what happens now is that the energy in each cell will be completely fixed. I mean, or you are in the middle and it's E2, or you are in the other places and it's E1. And then because of that, you can establish that this system has good space-time mixing properties, even independent of the size of the box, let's say. So then you will be in business for getting this diffusion, because actually what we want to establish is a central limit theorem for that thing. And what is F? It's a function, a distribution actually, which counts. So the difference of two things. So the first term here counts the number of times you go to the right, minus the number of times you go to the left. So this is. So this is something that. Yeah. So this is we computed this measure, and it's still uniform measure. Yes. So as I said, we didn't write theorem about that, but let me say that this is something that can be understood. But well, unfortunately, this is restricted to the case of just one fast particle. So that's remains a bit anecdotic stuff. So okay, that's it.